It was nothing but heartbreak and frustration for 65 races. But now, it's back-to-back trips to Victory Lane for the four team and Happy Harvick. If you doubted the closer, well, he's happy to prove you wrong. Chris, start it up.
Gentlemen, start your engines!
Welcome into the next generation of the Lead Left. The sports animals' hard-hitting and fast-paced NASCAR and racing podcast coming your way every Tuesday and Friday afternoon. Now it's time to drop the green flag and get fast and loud as we go inside the sports animal race shop for the Lead Left with your host, Sam Foreman.
And welcome in to week 27 of our NASCAR and racing coverage here in our 25th year of the Lead Lap. Come on in, grab a seat. The Sports Animal Race Shop is officially open for business as the Lead Lap comes to you once again from the Budweiser Studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, located on Old Kingston Pike here in the heart of Knoxville. Or Chris, in just a few more weeks, it'll be the heart of, well, what it is year round, but with a couple hundred thousand more diehard Vol fans screaming Rocky Top at the top of their lungs, as we are just a few more Thursdays away from the return of Tennessee football. We're even less days away from the return of college football, and we are just really days away from the return of high school football here in the state of Tennessee. So that means what for racing fans? Why am I talking about that on a racing podcast, Chris Bernard? Well, because a lot of racing fans also love football. So it's an exciting time for racing fans, because not only is football right around the corner, but now that Richmond is in the rearview mirror, there's only as many wins as Kevin Harvick has in the last 2 weeks left as far as races in the regular season for the NASCAR Cup Series. That would be two, Chris. How are you doing on this fine Wednesday afternoon, Mr. Bernard?
I'm doing well. How are you, Sam?
Well, I would have been better if we didn't have some scheduling issues and some more health issues. Though health issues being on my part. Go figure after the last couple of weeks. That's a shocking statement to our listeners have this coming out on Wednesday instead of a Tuesday, and have me a little behind the eight ball for what's going to be a busy and chaotic week. But you know what? Hey, let me check something here. Still have a pulse. There wasn't as much beating and banging as I expected in Richmond. What I thought was great intro. Virginia is normally for lovers, but this weekend it'll be for beating and banging short track style. That didn't necessarily happen, although, as we'll hear here in a little bit in the media pass from Kyle Busch, at least in his opinion, there was a chastaining that took place this weekend. I mean, you know, it is what it is.
Yes.
At this point, some people say it's gone a little too far. Some people say it's not gone far enough, and it's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And that was almost a track facts intro. But nonetheless, it was an interesting weekend at Richmond. I think the only person who might have left Richmond happier than Kevin Harvick, or at least competing for the happiest person in all of NASCAR, leaving the state of Virginia, the only person who might could have given Happy Harvick a run for his money, was your Truck Series winner, Chandler Smith. I mean, it's been a pretty incredible week for him, Chris. I mean, he welcomes his first child into this world, and within a week of his son's birth, is winning his third Truck Series race of the year, his fifth Truck Series race of his career, locking himself into the second round of the playoffs in the Truck Series. And before his son even realizes what his dad has done and is capable of comprehending what his dad did within the first week of his life, he's bringing a trophy home to his newborn son. So a congratulations to Chandler Smith and his family on the birth of their first son for him and his wife and their new addition to their family. But it's been an interesting weekend, a good weekend, a good chaotic and interesting start to the week. But he is Chris Bernard. I am Sam Foreman. We are your hosts here on The Lead Lap. It is our 27th week of action talking all things NASCAR and racing here in our 25th year of being the longest running NASCAR and racing show in the South. Coming your way normally every Tuesday and Friday at 1 o'clock. This week on a Wednesday and a Friday at 1 o'clock on 991, thesportsanimal.com. Of course, you can follow the show on Twitter at LeadLapCastWNML. You can follow myself on Twitter at Sam_ForemanWNML. And as you've heard me say often, and it bums me out every time that I say it, unfortunately, I have no Uncle George. So Foreman is spelled F-O-R-M-A-N. I do not have a claim to a certain grill empire, unfortunately. Chris, the man you hear laughing, if you wish to see what he tweets instead of hear him laugh, well, then the Lead Lap podcast is not for you, but Twitter is, and giving him a follow on the old Twitter.
You can find me at C_E_Bernard, and that's spelled B-E-R-N-A-R-D.
And, of course, you can also follow the show on Facebook by searching for Lead Lap Radio. Make sure you select the one that has 99.1 The Sports Animal in the bio. And, of course, you can follow The Sports Animal on all forms of social media by searching for 99.1 The Sports Animal on your favorite social media platform. Chris, let's go ahead and jump straight into the action. I see the green flag. It is out. It is waving. From the stand, it's time to reach up, pull the belts tight. The engines are a-roaring. It's time to get fast and loud with news and notes.
All right. Thank you, Sam. This is going to be your news and notes for August 17th, 2022. Daniel Suarez says he's close to taking his name off the NASCAR Cup Series silly season's uncertainty list, as the driver says he and Trackhouse Racing are close to finalizing a new deal to keep him with the team going forward. On Friday afternoon, after we released our second podcast of last week, 2311 Racing and Bubba Wallace announced that they had agreed to a new multi-year extension to keep Wallace in the number 23 Toyota. In Cup Series news from over the weekend, five teams failed pre-qualifying technical inspection twice on Saturday afternoon, resulting in crew member ejections and the teams losing pit box selection. Those teams were the number 6 and number 17 of RFK Racing, the number 31 and number 16 cars of Colleg Racing, and the number 38 car of Front Row Motorsports. On Friday, NASCAR announced a new multi-year partnership with leading full-service logistics partner Worldwide Express, naming the company the official logistics partner of NASCAR. For the first time in NASCAR Cup Series history, a record 7 different countries will be represented by the competitors this weekend in the Go Bowling at the Glen, including the multiple drivers representing the United States, Daniel Suarez from Mexico, sports car aces Mike Rockefeller from Germany, and Kyle Tilley from England, NASCAR Euro Series champ Loris Hesman from the Netherlands, and a pair of former F1 drivers, Kimi Raikkonen of Finland, the debuting driver for Project 91, and Daniel Kvyat from Russia, will represent the seven-nation field. On Tuesday, Watkins Glen International announced longtime NASCAR and track partner Sunoco as the entitlement partner for this week's NASCAR Xfinity Series race. Jordan Anderson Racing, Bonmarito Autosports, and a collaboration effort with AM Racing confirmed on Monday that NASCAR Camping World Truck Series veteran driver Austin Wayne Self will attempt to make his NASCAR Xfinity Series debut in Saturday's race at Watkins Glen. On Monday, it was announced that Sugarland's Distilling Company will partner with JTG Daughtry Racing to sponsor the hood of the number 47 Camaro ZL1 driven by Ricky Stenhouse Jr. in this Sunday's race at Watkins Glen. And that's your news and notes for August 17th, 2022.
Thank you, Chris. And one thing to add on this coming out of Richmond, a penalty for the truck series. And this was to be expected. Crew chief Danny Stockman has been fined $2,500 for a safety lug nuts properly not installed infraction following post-race inspection. That penalty following under sections 8.8.10.4A, the tires and wheels section of the NASCAR rulebook. He, of course, the crew chief for the winning driver, the number 18 of Chandler Smith. So just a post-race penalty there for one loose lug nut that was found in post-race inspection on the 18 truck post-race on Saturday night. Also, Tony Waters and Sean Kierlin have been reinstated by NASCAR and are eligible to return to all NASCAR activity effective immediately. Those reinstatements are effective technically as of the 16th of August. The penalty technically dated for Stockman as of the 13th of August. And again, taking place post-race from the 18 teams win at Richmond on Saturday night. And speaking of Richmond on Saturday night, now that news and notes is done, we'll jump straight into our weekend race recap. And we will start off with Saturday night's Worldwide Express 250 for Carrier Appreciation in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, the second race of the playoffs. Saturday was all about one thing, and that was getting to the lead first. Now, that may seem, Chris, like any and all races, but it was to teams on Saturday in the truck race at Richmond, it was that by a country mile. The race was controlled by two drivers, Ty Majeski and Chandler Smith. Smith took charge of the second event in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series playoffs when he won the race off pit road under a caution on lap 75 during the break between the first and second stages, and that would be the ball game, or in this case, that would be the race. Smith would lead the final 175 laps through two cautions, one for the second stage break and one for an accident in turn one involving Nick Letts and playoff driver Carson Hocevar. With his third victory of the year and fifth of his career, Smith earned automatic advancement to the second round of the playoffs, joining Grant Infinger, who won the playoff opener at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. Chandler crossed the line 2.790 seconds ahead of runner-up and fellow Kyle Busch Motorsports teammate John Hunter Nemechek as KBM finished 1, 2, and 5 on the night. The other driver that controlled the race was pole winner Ty Majeski, who led 73 straight laps after Chandler Smith led the first lap of the race. Majeski would go on to win stage one by more than 4 seconds, but his jackman, Paul Steele, would fall in front of his number 66 truck as he sprinted towards the right side of the truck on the pit stop at the end of stage one. Majeski was hard on the brakes to avoid injuring Steele, but the miscue cost him 2 positions he was never able to regain. Smith's crew, however, was exceptional. All 3 pit stops as the number 18 team got him off pit road first, negating John Hunter Nemechek's advantage of having the number 1 pit stall. Nemechek had cut Smith's lead down and at one point pulled alongside his teammate during a long green flag run before the race's only yellow for an incident. The lead lap trucks pitted for tires under caution, and Smith would pull away once again for the final restart on lap 223. Your top 10, again, your winner, Chandler Smith. Second place, John Hunter Nemechek. Third place, Ty Majeski. Fourth place, Grant Infinger. Fifth place, Corey Heim. Sixth place, Taylor Gray. Seventh place, Matt Crafton. Eighth place, Christian Eckes. Ninth place, Zane Smith. And 10th place, Carson Hocevar. The bottom 2 drivers in the standings will be eliminated, Chris, from the playoffs after the next race in the truck series on September 9th at Kansas Speedway, as the trucks have the next several weeks off. Now here's your recap of Sunday's NASCAR Cup Series Federated Auto Parts 400. Last Sunday at Michigan, Kevin Harvick broke a 65-race winless drought. And now the driver of the number 4, Stewart Haas Racing Ford, has 2 races, 1 in back-to-back weeks. Harvick was challenged and chased by runner-up Christopher Bell and third-place finisher Chris Buescher. Over the closing laps, but Harvick was able to thread his way through traffic to win Sunday's race at Richmond Raceway by 0.441 seconds over Christopher Bell. The win was Harvick's fourth at the 3/4-mile short track and his first there since 2013. The win was also his 60th win of his career, tying him with Kyle Busch for the most among active drivers and in a tie with Busch for ninth all-time in the Cup Series. Harvick led the race twice for a total of 55 laps, passing eventual sixth-place finisher Joey Logano for the lead on lap 334 and regaining it from Denny Hamlin on lap 353 at the end of a cycle of green flag pit stops and would go on to lead the final 48 laps of the race. Buescher got as close as Harvick's bumper in traffic but couldn't make a run for the lead before Harvick was able to pass and lap Bubba Wallace. Buescher would get stuck behind Wallace's number 23 Toyota and fall to 2 seconds behind Harvick. On 12-lap fresher tires, Bell charged forward, slipping past Buescher on lap 396 of 400 and closed on Harvick before running out of time to catch and pass the number 4 car for the win. In a battle for the last position in the playoffs, Ryan Blaney widened his advantage over Martin Truex Jr. despite finishing 10th to Truex 7th. The difference was in stage points as Blaney scored 11 to none for MTJ. And now Blaney leads the 2017 series champ by 26 points with two races left in the regular season. Your top 10 for the Cup Series from Sunday. Your winner again for the second time in 2 weeks, Kevin Harvick. Runner-up, Christopher Bell. Third place, Chris Buescher. Fourth place, Denny Hamlin. Fifth place, Chase Elliott. Sixth place, Joey Logano. Seventh place, Martin Truex Jr. Eighth place, Eric Almirola. Ninth place, Kyle Busch. And 10th place, Ryan Blaney. The Cup Series is back in action this Sunday at Watkins Glen. Chris, for the 25th regular season race of 2022. And that will conclude this weekend's edition, or this week's, I should say, edition of your weekend race recap. And Chris, it was a tale of two different races, but a lot of similarities at the same time. Get out to the front quick, get in clean air, and you have the ability to pull away, whether that was for the Cup cars on Sunday, and especially for the trucks on Saturday night. Any quick thoughts before we move on to the media pass in reaction and anything to add to the recap there for this weekend?
I think you hit the highlights there. Just two great races for differing reasons. A lot of action, a couple of hilarious mistakes. I mean, it just, this weekend proved how the smallest thing going sideways can completely and utterly just throw everything into chaos. So, I mean, I know we had a couple of conversations before about how this wasn't quite as grand of a weekend at Richmond as it could have been, but still, it proved how much racing can very much be on a knife edge between victory and defeat.
Yeah, and how much momentum can be a major factor for you. We've yet to see Zane Smith really pull away and look as dominant as he did even late in the regular season so far through the first two Truck Series races. Now we have a long pause. He's seems very safe to make it to the next round, but we've yet to see him necessarily look as dominant. Meanwhile, several other drivers have looked just as dominant as they did in the rest of the regular season, especially at the tail end, even though they failed to make it to victory lane during those stretches. And then, of course, maybe one of the biggest stories in all of NASCAR right now, where in the world did the 4 car come from? From not winning a race in 65 races, even though he had some moments where he was close, to back-to-back wins for Kevin Harvick and company. And, hey, they're moving on up to victory lane in the number 4 camp. Stewart Haas Racing all of a sudden getting things turned around a little bit. And you know what? A lot of people sitting there saying, oh, those people locked in the playoffs, they done screwed up. I mean, think about it. Heading into Michigan, it looked like Kevin Harvick wasn't going to make the playoffs because a lot of people didn't think he could get the win. Now, two races later, he's won two races and he's locked in the playoffs and going to be a fairly high seed to where he's, unless things go awful, not in a whole lot of jeopardy of not making it out of the first round. It just proves this is why we don't race on paper, Chris. This is why you go to the track, because anything and everything can and probably will happen.
And it's not over until this is one more time in racing. It proves that in racing, like many other things, it ain't over until the rather large lady sings.
Or for a different kind of expression along the same line, and this one's nice and southern fried for you, that old dog can still hunt. There we go. Nice southern fried quote for you, an analogy right there. All right, let's go ahead and jump now over the pit wall and sneak you into the media center as it's time for this week's edition of the Media Pass as we hear the best comments from this weekend at Richmond.
The Lead Lap crew has searched far and wide for the best sound bites from the week that was in NASCAR. Now it's time for the Lead Lap crew to sneak you behind the wall and into the media center for your weekly media pass.
All right, we start off this edition of the Media Pass with, well, Chris, at worst case, the second happiest man in NASCAR, and easily the happiest man in the NASCAR truck series right now. That is brand new father and Richmond winner, Chandler Smith.
I don't know if there's anybody that's had a better couple weeks than you. You become a new dad a little over a week ago. Today, you check into the next round of the playoffs with a absolutely dominant performance. You got the lead at the end of stage two, or end of stage one, and never look back.
Dude, God is so good. Like you just said, I'm a daddy now. My wife, she had such an amazing labor and delivery. We have an amazing, beautiful baby boy at home. Honey, this is for you. Junior, this is for you as well. I can't wait to get home to you guys tonight. God is so good. I mean, the fact that the blessings just keep stacking up. I have an incredible group behind me with KBM, incredible partners with Charge Me, QuickTie Products, SafeLight, everybody. It's just I'm taking this in. I don't know what I've done to deserve it, but I'm going to soak it in and keep giving all glory to the Lord.
You mentioned the incredible group behind you, Danny Stockman, your crew chief, your entire race team at Kyle Busch Motorsports. Did you guys just serve notice tonight that the championship goes through this 18 truck?
I'll leave that to you guys. Just like I said at Media Day, if the good Lord wants it to be our championship, it will. If it's not, it's not. But I like how everything's going right now for sure.
There is a man who's definitely happy, positive, but not overconfident right now, Chris, if you ask me. He's just riding the emotions, taking things week for week, which for someone as young as he is overall, but also into his racing career in NASCAR, I think probably the correct approach for racing for this championship. And also probably going to enjoy the opportunity to get a little bit of extra rest, what little he's going to get in retrospect with a newborn at home. At least he doesn't have to worry about trying to prep for a race for a couple of weeks.
His wife's probably going to be pretty grateful that truck series is off for the next few weeks.
Yeah, it's kind of like maternity leave hit for him, and the whole series gets to go with it. Although he's probably going to be doing a lot of work and a lot of racing as well, but off from the truck series there as well. From one winner to another, here's Kevin Harvick on what it took for him to go back-to-back trips to victory lane.
Yeah, well, you know, I think there's really no vision, and you know, I think for us, it's always try to be as competitive as we can be. And I think as you look at this particular 2-week stretch, I think it holds true, right? We haven't done anything different other than keep working, keep doing the things that we've been doing. Our cars have been fast for the last month and a half to be competitive, and we've just not had bad luck. And you know, I think when you're dotting the I's and crossing the T's, and our car was very bad the first run of the race today. And I think that shows how much they understand what they need to do to the race car to make the adjustments to make the car competitive and go back forward and contend and then win the race. So, you know, I think that's what we've been working towards, and we'll continue to dissect the wins just like we do the losses and see where it all goes from here.
That is a confident closer and a happy Harvick who I think, Chris, might have started to figure out this next-gen car, which could spell trouble for the rest of the playoff field. While Harvick might just be the hottest driver in the Cup Series over the last 2 weeks, one driver who's giving him a run for his money in that category, and one of the hottest drivers in the Cup Series over the last month, is Christopher Bell of Joe Gibbs Racing. Seabell almost got that number 20 to a point to where it could have passed Harvick for the win. If he had another lap or two, it might be Christopher Bell we're talking about winning for a second time this season. Now, Harvick will tell you he messed up on the last couple of laps, allowing Bell to get closer than he should have. Christopher Bell was on a rocket ship, though. Here's Seabell on finishing P2 at Richmond.
Christopher, you spun earlier in the race. You still managed to bring it home second. Tell us how you did that. How did strategy affect it?
Yeah, just spin was just driver error, trying to be a little bit too aggressive early. But my team did a really, really good job getting us where we were contending at the end of the race. You know, I never thought we were going to get there early on. So proud of the never quit attitude, proud of my pit crew. We had a couple rocky stops at the beginning of the race, and then they made up for it at the end and had great pit stops. So total team effort. Adam Stevens did a great job. Pit crew did a great job and had a really good third stage.
What is it about tracks like Richmond, tracks like New Hampshire, even Phoenix that you really seem to succeed at?
I don't know. I wish I could tell you what it is, but it's just a product of having great race cars and driving for Joe Gibbs Racing. Loudoun and Richmond is two of their best racetracks. So, you know, I wish I could tell you it's something I'm doing, but it's really not. It's just the cars that I get to drive.
No, Toyota has struggled on the road courses this season, but Christopher Bell could be a name to watch this weekend at the Glen. From one Toyota driver to another Toyota driver and keeping it inside Joe Gibbs Racing, here's some comments from Kyle Busch as he talks about getting Chastained, strategy playing a role in them being able to stay in the top 10, but also not getting a top 5 finish, and, well, his thoughts on the last two races of the regular season.
I know that wasn't what you wanted. How would you describe today's action?
I mean, we were looking okay and in a good spot just coming up through there, working our way methodically through the field with our M&M's Toyota Camry. And we got Chastain this week. We were his victim this week. And then that didn't hurt us too bad. We restarted back in a decent spot. But then the next spin, I think, was Christopher. That allowed the guys that were around us that we were kind of racing, some of our team guys, to come get tires. And then they had 10 fresher laps on tires than us the whole rest of the day. So that kind of hurt us. If we would have been on that strategy, we would have run out of tires, but we also probably would have been, you know, in the top five. So just wrong side of the strategy there at the end. Nothing to do really to flip that, but good fight all day long. You know, the top 10's about what we had anyway. I figured the best we were was about a seventh, you know, but barring a strategy call, we could have probably been top five. So that's all we had anyway.
Kyle, how does this set you up for the next 2 weeks? I know Toyota's had a little struggle on the road courses this year, but then you have Daytona coming up as well, which is a wild card.
Yeah, for sure. I think at the end of these road courses anyways, those are wild cards too. So, you know, I don't know that we can get five wide on the front stretch at Watkins Glen, but watch us. We'll try, and we'll see what happens. But Watkins Glen's always been a great track for us, and this car has definitely not been our strong suit for the road courses, so I would assume, just assumption, that we wouldn't be that great. I would think that we can go run for a top 10, though, barring missing everything happening. And then, again, same thing for Daytona. Just crapshoot, try to go in there and again, get another top 10. Try to get the bus rolling in the right direction right now.
You know, Chris, the thing that sticks out the most to me there about those comments from Kyle Busch are typically throughout his career, when he's had a rough stretch like he currently is on, a post-race interview where he feels he got taken out by someone. You heard him say that he got Chastained and he was Ross's victim for the week. He got on the wrong strategy and he didn't feel he had a great car from the get-go, and strategy cost them getting it where they could have. And he's talking about how he doesn't feel very like he's got a great opportunity for the next couple of races. That's not the tone we typically would hear from Kyle Busch, which is interesting, especially considering everything going on with the contract situation and all of that drama. I mean, this typically where when we've had these situations in a race, we would hear Kyle be very short, kind of rude, not really have any patience or any tolerance for anything in a post-race interview, and definitely not give almost a 2-minute interview. Really a interesting. Not sure if I should read anything into that. Not really sure what to read into that. But it's kind of been a trend over the last couple of weeks of his interviews haven't seemed the way historically you would think they would go. And what does that mean or does it mean anything is what a lot of us in NASCAR world, fans, media members alike, Chris, have been wondering and asking ourselves and on shows like this and on radio debating.
Yeah, that interview seems oddly zen.
Very mellow for Kyle Busch when things don't go well.
Yes, he seems very much at peace with the state of things, even though, forgive me, Kyle Busch fans, but it kind of, you kind of expect him to sort of verbally, like, reaching for the flamethrower and wanting to go chase down Ross after that incident.
Speaking for most of us, to a degree, yes. I'll speak for us Kyle Busch fans. Yeah, to a degree, at least expect him to be a little bit ruder than, or, well, ruder's not maybe the right way of saying, but have a little bit more of a fiery comment, or at least a little bit more of a certain kind of sarcastic-y tone to saying, yeah, I got Chastained. Although I do kind of want, I like we said, I know to a degree, some of it is a bit over the top and a little overkill, especially with some fans and some social media interaction amongst fans with the whole everything is Ross's fault right now, especially with Toyota fans. And, you know, I'm a Joe Gibbs fan. We put the fan hat on for a moment. Not to take the journalist hat on, put the fan hat on. Being biased here for a minute, I'm a Toyota fan. I'm a Joe Gibbs fan. I'm a Kyle Busch fan. I like Denny. I like Martin Truex Jr. You know, I like everyone at JGR. Well, I don't have a problem with Ross and how he drives necessarily. It's tend to kind of seems to be a lot of his issues kind of be affecting Toyota and Toyota drivers here. So, you know, there's a lot of Toyota fans out there and Joe Gibbs fans who are being maybe are being highly critical of Ross, some that are being overly critical and taking it a little bit over the top and a little dramatic. And it's not just Joe Gibbs fans or Toyota fans or Denny Hamlin or Kyle Busch fans. Taking the fan hat off, putting the journalist hat on and trying to be, you know, unbiased and have some perspective here that's not from a potentially, you know, rose-colored glasses fan point of view here. Some of it's a bit over the top, but at the same time, I kind of just want a shirt, Chris, that simply says, I got Chastained. I want that to be a thing. I want a shirt that just says, I got Chastained. and I don't know why. I don't care what color. I don't care who's what driver it is. Heck, if Ross puts it out, I would probably buy it. I just want a shirt that says, I got Chastained.
Likewise, I am right there with you. Like, put that on the front, on the back, Chastained, and then a snarky Urban Dictionary style definition underneath it on the back.
You think we'd have to give him like an NIL percentage or something to do a listen to the lead lap or we'll Chastain you shirt?
Probably.
Yeah, I don't know. Think he'd just go for it. You know,
he might.
We told him we were large fans of watermelons and all things watermelon. Think he'd go for it. Think if we told him we kept a live moose in the building just for when he wins with the moose car.
The moose thing might not help us and may wind up with TWRA like breathing down our necks.
TWRA. They'll be okay. We don't have to let them know it's a real moose, quote unquote. Anyways, off topic, one last clip for you. The person who maybe was a bigger winner than Kevin Harvick on Sunday, and we'll talk about this here in just a minute inside the big three, was Ryan Blaney. He increased his lead for that final spot in the playoffs over Martin Truex Jr. And as I mentioned in the recap, he did so by having more stage points than Truex. Ryan Blaney here going to talk about his day at Richmond, going to talk about his confidence level heading into the final two races. Here are comments now from Ryan Blaney.
Yeah, we fell off a lot. Like we had two runs where we just really lost speed and lost grip and fell off really hard quickly. I wasn't sure what was going on. I was confused, and but they reeled me back in and got us a little bit better back to where we need to be to run a little bit more consistent, you know, back after the top 10. So I was a little worried for a while because we were dropping like a rock quick, and I was panic mode, but we got it a little bit better and was able to maintain.
The fact you're able to increase points on Truex, not a new winner, you're going to, you know, you've been strong on road courses, obviously Daytona you were strong. Do you feel better about your position now than you were coming into today?
I don't know. I mean, you never know what could happen. You know, you could have a bad day next week or next 2 weeks. You could have a new winner one of those weeks. You just never know. So I don't feel better or worse about it. Just one race down and proud of the effort that we had, and then try to do the same thing next week.
And that again, Ryan Blaney, and that'll put a bow on this week's edition of the Media Pass. Time to shut the door, and then we've been kicked out of the media center. But that was some of the biggest and best comments from the weekend that was in NASCAR. Again, as we bring you comments from this weekend's winners, Chandler Smith and Kevin Harvick, as well as runner-up in the Cup Series, Christopher Bell, his teammate Kyle Busch, and then Ryan Blaney from Team Penske, who you just heard right there. Let's go ahead, Chris, and keep the momentum going as we jump into this week's edition of the Big Three.
The on-track results are in. The celebration in victory lane is done, but there's still plenty of time, drama, and headlines to debate and discuss as the lead lap brings you the Big Three. Number three.
All right, Chris, we start off the Big Three by looking at the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series race from Saturday night, and that, of course, means we're going to talk about the winner of that race, Chandler Smith, and we've talked about it a little bit already, but the race on Saturday night was just pure dominance, really by both drivers, Chandler Smith and Ty Majeski, as I mentioned in the recap, where Ty Majeski led 73 laps after Chandler Smith led the first lap of the race. But then Chandler Smith getting the lead to start stage two and holding on to it throughout the rest of the race, leading the final 175 laps. And really up until late, when John Hunter Nemechek made a run, started closing in on that gap, and got as close as being side by side with Chandler Smith before the lone caution for an incident in the race, which is not normal for a truck series race, especially at a short track. Before that lone caution came out, really it was Chandler Smith just running away with it. And if Chandler Smith hadn't got in traffic and really some brilliant driving in traffic by John Hunter Nemechek to catch up with his teammate in Chandler Smith, I'm not sure we really would have seen much of a competitive ending, but all the leaders came to pit road after that caution came out, got tires, and again, Chandler Smith just rocket shipped out to a big lead and pulled away on that final restart, and it was over. Again, leading the final 175 laps, and as I mentioned in the recap, really, it was ball game from the start of stage number two, or race over, since it's a race, from the end of the start of stage number two. Chris, what are your overall thoughts on just such a dominant race at Richmond for Chandler Smith? And is this any indication to you that he can continue this going forward, or where does this change your mind about if maybe he is the Smith we should be keeping our eye on in the championship race in the truck series? As while Zane Smith had a solid night at IRP, really struggled to be much more of a top 10 to really even a top 15 truck throughout most of the night at Richmond.
That was an incredibly good performance by Chandler Smith. He still sort of gives me a dark horse vibe for the truck championship. The question's really going to be how does he perform through the next couple of through the next round of eliminations in the championship before I can really count him as a solid contender for the title itself.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I'm not trying to take anything away from Chandler here.
Neither am I.
It was a pure dominant race, but if Ty Majeski didn't have his Jackman fall down on that pit stop in between stage one and two, I'm not sure it wasn't Ty Majeski leading almost everything. Because Ty Majeski was just purely as dominant, if not more dominant, in that first stage as Chandler was the rest of the race. And it really was kind of who's in the front row and who got off to the best restart and cleared the other person in the front row, or maybe as someone from the second row got a really good restart, who cleared the field first, and then they were gone really throughout the whole race. It really, as far as terms of action for the truck series, it wasn't that great of a race. It was entertaining in areas, but not so much at the front of the field. You know, you didn't have a lot of action towards the front. The restarts weren't as chaotic as we've seen, and with as chaotic as things ended at IRP and as many drivers left there with hard feelings, you really kind of wondered if we weren't going to see mass chaos at times at Richmond. But it's almost like everybody decided to play nice and try to be like, let's see if everybody can forget what I did to them at the last race heading into this weekend, and then make sure we go into this big break without anyone having really upset feelings towards me and really hating my guts. It almost seemed like it was play nice week at times.
Yeah, that definitely seems a little weird. And I was also the thought as I was listening to the recap, is this F1 or is this truck series? Because it sounds startlingly like an F1 race of somebody running away with the lead and all the scrapping in the midfield and just no elbows whatsoever racing. So, but yeah, that was a ridiculously good run by Chandler Smith. No doubt aided by Ty Majeski's pit misfortunes. But
yeah, and kudos to Chandler's pit crew. I mean, they were perfect all night long. One of the fastest got him off pit road each time he was there first. And, you know, it wasn't a boring race by any means. I wasn't bored. I don't think it was a bad race, but it was a different kind of interesting. And I do kind of like your F1 analysis there, Chris, where it was. There wasn't a whole lot of action at the front, a whole lot of passing there. But there was a lot of entertaining stuff going on through the back. And one of the things I found most fascinating, I don't know about you, but seeing Zane Smith, who, again, as I mentioned, didn't have the best night, kind of watching where he was throughout each run, to me, was interesting. Because he was able to make some passes, but how worried are you about Zane Smith after not having the greatest two races for the first two parts of the playoffs here in the first round for the truck series? Because I'm with you on Chandler Smith. I don't know if I've seen enough from either him or Grant Enfinger to say that they're a favorite. I don't know if I've seen enough from anyone to say that they're a clear-cut favorite right now for the title, but I do think I've seen a lack of enough from Zane Smith right now to where I'm a little concerned about picking him as my favorite going in and giving him the 50% chance of winning it that I did.
Yeah, that's a little concerning for Zane Smith. I'm a little bit more concerned for Ben Rhodes at this point.
That was another one. He was awful.
Yeah, he was absolutely nowhere. And
now, he had a lot of brake shake, and he did say that was a big problem, but that truck was awful all weekend long. And brake shake is a big issue at Richmond when you have it. But that truck, it just was not right, and you could tell Ben was not happy with that thing from the start of the race all the way through the finish.
Yeah, that puts an insane amount of pressure on Ben Rhodes at this point, because if he has another bad weekend, correct me if I'm wrong here, but he has another bad weekend, he may well be out.
Let's see. I want to say He is 21 points good right now. So still sitting comfortable.
Which column are you using to sort?
So you got to go by the playoff rankings at this point.
Okay.
So he's got 17 playoff points at this point. So he's 21 good above the cut line. Right now, he's sitting 21 points good. He's the seventh driver. So Matt Crafton is sitting 3 points above the cut line for the second round. Carson Hocevar, ninth, three back. And then Christian Eckes, 10th, six back. So Rhodes is looking okay. But Chris, to your point, that's still not a ton of wiggle room. And while he may be safe-ish going into the next round, to get into the round of eight, that still puts him behind the eight ball trying to get into the championship four. Yeah, I guess that was kind of absurd. But again, Chandler Smith is pure dominance. Which, is that any surprise to you that he was as good as he was? I guess that's not the way. I guess what I'm trying to say is, was his dominance, do you think that played any role in how dominant he was able to be? And really Majeski to an extent there as well, with the fact that Zane Smith and Ben Rhodes, two big favorites, really struggled most of the night. Or do you think it was just Chandler was that good and really so was Ty to a degree?
Ben Rhodes and Zane Smith having not the best of weekends definitely helped things. But Chandler Smith is got some of the most impressive stats out of anybody. Like, I mean, he's tied with Zane Smith for the number of wins.
Yeah.
He's right up there with both Smith and Rhodes for top five, top tens. And also right up there with them when it comes to laps led.
And now sitting in a tie, essentially, for the playoffs lead with Grant Enfinger as far. Well, he's into the next round there. Yeah. Those two are locked in. Really, Zane Smith is locked in pretty much as well. And John Hunter Nemechek and Ty Majeski really both pretty solidly locked in there as well. But overall, just a dominant weekend from Chandler Smith. Kudos to him. And again, congratulations on the new addition to the family.
Number two.
All right, number two, Chris. This is shifting gears to the Cup Series and asking an opinion question. And one that's interesting, and I've heard it get tossed around since Kevin Harvick's win over the weekend. What's been the bigger surprise this year? Trackhouse Racing having three wins to date, or Kevin Harvick winning back-to-back races after going 65 races without a win?
I'm going to have to weigh in on the Kevin Harvick getting these last two wins. Trackhouse seems to have sort of been on the rise, like going into this, like sort of been primed for this season, whereas Harvick was absolutely nowhere. It felt like he was absolutely nowhere before these last two races. And he was like, sort of like on his, somebody's going to get offended with the way I'm going to phrase this, but there's no other way to phrase it. He was sort of on a, I don't know, slow decline towards retirement almost. That's just my sort of vibe before he got these two wins out of nowhere and is suddenly competing, not retirement, but sliding sort of quasi towards irrelevancy. And suddenly, boom, gets these two wins and he's right back in the thick of it. So definitely him getting the wins over Trackhouse getting wins.
I think it's an interesting question. I think it's about how the question's worded, because I think it's difficult to answer either way. If the question was, what's the bigger surprise, Trackhouse Racing having three wins this season or Kevin Harvick having two wins this season after not having a win in 65 races, then I lean easily towards Trackhouse. But the question is not worded that way. It's what's the bigger surprise this year, Trackhouse having won three races or Kevin Harvick winning back-to-back after going 65 races without a win. And I lean Kevin Harvick a little bit. It's a very close margin of victory for Kevin Harvick here for me. I lean that way, Chris, for this reason. It's the consistency you have to win back-to-back races. One, obviously, there's some luck involved in going back-to-back in anything in auto racing as far as a win. Doesn't matter what sport, what we're talking about racing, to win back-to-back, there is some luck involved because so many things have to go right. But we haven't seen the consistency out of Harvick in this four team all year, really, to indicate that winning back-to-back races was really possible. Getting a win, snapping that winless streak, sure. Go back to the Clash, finished 10th. Go back to the Duel at Daytona, finished 10th. The Daytona 500, finished 30th. At Auto Club, he finished 7th. Las Vegas, 12th. Phoenix, 6th. But then Atlanta, 21st. Coda, finished 11th. Richmond, he finished 2nd in the first race. Then 14th at Martinsville, but then 34th on dirt at Bristol. 10th at Talladega, 9th at Dover, 4th at Darlington, then 15th at Kansas, then 17th in the All-Star race, but then 3rd at Charlotte in the Coke 600, then 33 at Worldwide Technology Raceway, but then 4th at Sonoma, 10th at Nashville, 10th at Road America, 12th at Atlanta, 5th at New Hampshire, then 27th at Pocono. Yes, he was involved in some incidents. Then 33rd at Indianapolis on the road course. Yes, involved in incidents again. And now back-to-back first-place finishes. So the consistency just wasn't necessarily there. Yes, the ability to win a race was clearly there. The ability to snap that streak, but the consistency wasn't there. Trackhouse racing in the first year with Daniel Suarez showed a lot of promise. And we know that Daniel's a really good road course racer. Where does first win come? On a road course. We know that Ross is pretty talented on road courses as well. Well, he's got a win, right? Where did his first win come this year? Where did Trackhouse's first win come with Ross? On a road course. So when you look at where two of those three wins are for Trackhouse, that, you know, I'm not trying to take anything away from those wins, especially not considering they're Daniel and Ross's first Cup Series wins of their career, but it was on tracks where historically they've had some success at. So maybe it's not the most surprising place to see them get their first win. And look, the fact that Ross has two wins is definitely surprising, right? It's been one of the big storylines of the year. How well Ross's run has been a huge storyline this year. How well Daniel's run. How well the team as a whole, both cars, have run consistently week in and week out, have been one of the bigger storylines. Trackhouse is having a phenomenal season. It's been a big storyline all year. How well they're doing with this next-gen car. They're having a phenomenal season. Not trying to take anything away with them, and it's by just the slimmest, Chris, the slimmest of margins that I give this win to Kevin Harvick. Give him three wins in a row now, shall we say. Or four, because you gave him the win there too, I guess. But while Trackhouse has been incredibly, incredibly impressive, I think the fact that a lot of the credit goes to the next-gen car. If this were still the Gen 6 car, I'm not sure we're talking about them having three wins and having the kind of success that they've had this year. So that kind of makes me lean Harvick. Because, again, it's about the consistency and the difficulty of winning back-to-back, especially after going 65 races without a win. And, yes, there's been flashes of being able to break that streak multiple times in that 65-race period. But the lack of consistency has been clear and been one of the biggest issues over that stretch. Trackhouse has been a phenomenal story. not trying to take anything away from them and their accomplishments from this year. But because I think part of those accomplishments get credited to this next-gen car, and because we've seen Kurt Busch, who, yes, while he's a well-established driver, get a win in not even half a season worth of races for a new organization and get that organization's second ever win. Because we've seen other drivers from teams that don't normally have that kind of success, aren't normally competing for wins at the rate that we've seen them compete for wins and compete for top fives and compete for top tens and compete for top 15s and compete for top 20s for that matter, do so at such a higher level in large part because of this next-gen car and leveling the playing field. I think in this particular case, in this conversation, with how the question's worded, Chris, bigger surprise this year, Trackhouse Racing having three wins or Harvick winning back-to-back after going 65 races without a win. I think that kind of dampens the accomplishment of Trackhouse Racing a little bit. Again, not trying to take anything away from them, not trying to say that what they've done isn't great, but with how the question is worded, with how I worded the question, with how I've heard other people, other NASCAR fans talking about it on social media, other media members discussing this topic, how I've heard it worded, I got to give Kevin Harvick the slightest nod here, because I think the next-gen car and a lot of other people having the same sort of success, even if it's not necessarily been wins, kind of spoils or takes a little bit of the shine off what Trackhouse has done this year.
Yeah, I can agree with that. The one caveat I would give to this in addition to the next-gen car leveling the playing field is just the – it's not the biggest gap in the world, but I'm looking at the standings, and Ross leads out of the entire field in top 10s with 10 – not top 10s, but it leads with the number of top 5s at 10 and is second only to Chase Elliott – with top 10s. Like, that is insane consistency. I mean, so I'm not going to go and ascribe, but I agree with you that Harvick's last two wins are the bigger surprise of the two, but I'm not going to say it's all the car for Trackhouse.
No, I'm not trying to say that it's only the car, but I don't think they'd have three wins if this were the Gen 6 car. And yeah. I think that other teams have seen, while maybe not quite the same level of success, a similar increase in their success week to week that Trackhouse has seen as well. So I think that just that's what makes me lean towards Harvick.
Number one.
All right, number one in the big three this week. Chris, who was actually the bigger winner on Sunday in the Cup Series? Kevin Harvick winning back-to-back races, or Ryan Blaney, who, even though he finished behind Martin Truex Jr., saw Martin Truex Jr. struggle at a track that he is very good at, and Blaney actually leave with an increase in the points lead between him and MTJ heading into the final two races?
I feel like Blaney is the bigger winner of the two because he survived another weekend staying in contention for a playoff run. Harvick's already locked in there. So Blaney's, in my opinion, is the bigger winner because it keeps his playoff hopes alive.
So this is, again, complicated. It's hard not to say Harvick when 2 weeks ago we were talking about Kevin Harvick has to win a race in order to have a chance of getting in the playoffs. Now he's won back-to-back and he's locked in. He's guaranteed to the playoffs and probably locked in high enough in points right now, sitting at seventh in the playoff standings to where good chance he's in good shape without having something bad happen to him to be comfortably away from the cut line of making it, of being in trouble for the first round. He should be able to get into the second round easily unless he has some issues. with where he sits right now on the points side of things. Not the case, obviously, 2 weeks ago. But for Blaney, right now, we got a repeat winner. And that was kind of the track that everyone thought Martin Truex had his best shot at. Martin Truex Jr. and his crew openly talked about throughout the weekend that was their shot. That was the track they felt they had to get it done at and could get it done at. And they just were off all weekend long. They never were a serious threat to win and contend for that race title. And not only could they not contend for the win, Chris, you go and you lose points to Ryan Blaney. And with as bad as Toyota has been this year with this next-gen car at road courses, you got to kind of think it's not going to be good for Martin Truex Jr. this weekend at the Glen, even though it's a different kind of road course and he's had some success there before. You just got to kind of say recent history suggests Toyota is not going to be a good weekend for them, for any driver for Toyota. And Daytona's and Super Speedways have not been his strong point. Ryan Blaney, it has been. He's got a win at Daytona. And he's a decent road course racer. So we talked about last week how we both said we'd rather be Martin Truex Jr. heading into Richmond. Now I think, I don't know if you feel the same, but now I'd really almost rather be Ryan Blaney. Because I don't think it's a must-win for him this week or next week. Now, it still is to a degree because if we get a unique winner in either one of the next 2 weeks that's not him, then he's still on the outside looking in. So it's still must-win in that category for him. But as far as the battle between him and Martin Truex Jr., the pressure's kind of lessened for him. He increased his point lead. And now, it's still not an overcomable margin. Martin Truex Jr. can still surpass that in a race. But you've got to feel that you've got the advantage in the next two tracks. You've got to feel you're more likely to win in the next two tracks over Martin Truex Jr. if you're Ryan Blaney. You've just got to be breathing a little bit easier and feeling a little bit more confident. Vice versa, if you're Martin Truex Jr., the pressure's amplified because now it is absolutely, you've got to feel must win. Yeah, you're not technically out of it from a point standpoint, but you got to be thinking, while we've got to get every point we can get, we just got to be all in on trying to get a win at this point. You failed at your biggest opportunity and maybe your best opportunity to get that win and lock yourself into the playoffs. Now you got to really find a way to win this weekend because history says you're not going to get it done at Daytona. You can run okay, but you've just not had the success long-term at Daytona or Super Speedways in your career. So it really just puts almost all the pressure in the world on Martin Truex Jr., it feels like, to find some way to overcome Toyota's struggles on road courses and find a way to get a win at the Glen this weekend. And so because of that, I got to lean Ryan Blaney over Kevin Harvick. Again, not by a lot, but I got to lean Ryan Blaney a little bit here because, I mean, yeah, the pressure is all off for Kevin Harvick to an extent here. Now it's about just trying to get as many playoff points as you can and seeing how many more spots maybe you can jump in the standings heading into the playoffs. But you don't have to worry about winning it anymore at this point. Necessarily. Yeah, you still do to an extent if you're Ryan Blaney, but you got to feel more confident than Martin Truex Jr. does about this weekend if you're Ryan Blaney, I would think. And there's got to be less pressure on you because if nothing else, you know you can go to Daytona and still run well. And Ryan Blaney's got that sort of backup plan that, yeah, Martin Truex Jr. does too to an extent of, I've got enough points built up. Looking at the regular season points total, where he's second in points in the regular season total, to where even if we get a unique winner at Watkins Glen that's not him or if it's Martin Truex Jr., he can go to Daytona where he's won before and win and still get in the playoffs. Martin Truex Jr. does have that luxury as well, but if he's not that unique winner this weekend at the Glen, he's got to go to a track where it does not necessarily historically spell a lot of success for him. He still has that same window and the same opportunity, but we've had a lot less confidence and stats that prove it's possible to happen at Daytona.
Exactly. Blaney is in control of his own destiny.
I mean, they both are, but it seems like the path is a lot clearer for Blaney, and he's got a lot more control over that path than Martin Truex Jr. does right now.
Truex Jr. almost needs some outside divine intervention. He's not quite there where he needs a Hail Mary to get in, but he's rapidly approaching that point.
He really almost, I mean, I really think he has to find a way to win this week. But what he really almost needs to happen is a very early DNF for Ryan Blaney. And then for him to find a way to have like a top five this weekend. And then for Blaney to have, and then repeat winners the next 2 weeks. And then for him to win a race. And then for, again, him to have a top five, top 10 at Daytona, and Blaney to have something go horribly wrong early that puts him in the back of the field or DNF. That's really kind of almost where Truex is. But again, I think that puts him under a ton of pressure to win and win now. More so than he was last week, which is why, again, I don't think it's by a huge margin, and not take anything away from Kevin Harvick, but I got to lean slightly Ryan Blaney. I do want to play one more audio clip before we move on to the stock watch here. And this is from NBC analyst Kyle Petty. This was actually from last week's edition of Stacking Pennies. This was before Kevin Harvick won back-to-back. This is Kyle Petty talking about how dangerous he thinks Kevin Harvick could be now that he will be in the NASCAR playoffs.
Kevin said it, and really, I'd paid no attention to it. In position to win New Hampshire. He was running third or fourth at Pocono when Denny and Ross got together.
Correct.
Okay. Not much at Indy, but I don't consider Kevin much of a road racer. You know, when you get into it, it's just not been his forte. He's a good road racer, but he's not that level. And then he comes up there. And I think if you look at that and you say, they're like Bubba. They were non-existent for the first 15, 20 races of the season. Last four or five races, they've showed up. I think that makes Kevin and Rodney an extremely dangerous team because nobody knows what they can do because you haven't seen. I know what Chase is going to do.
Yeah.
You know, I know what Denny's probably going to do. You know, we've seen them. They've showed us their stuff. But that makes – and listen, you don't have to win in that first round. You don't really have to win in that second round. And if one thing Kevin and Rodney do, they're blue collar. They grind it out. Yeah. They'll take a 15th place car and run ninth with it. You know, they'll play a ninth place car and run sixth with it. And they'll just point you. And that's all you got to do in those first two races.
And that, again, I think that's a key to how Kevin's won back-to-back races. But wanted to work that in there for a couple of reasons because, Chris, I think that speaks to both the last 2 points we had in the big three this week as to what was the biggest surprise, Trackhouse winning three races or Harvick winning back-to-back after going 65 races without a win, or who was the bigger winner on Sunday, Harvick or Blaney. I think someone who maybe was the biggest loser over the last 2 weeks is the playoff field that was locked in because things could get interesting now that Kevin Harvick is for sure locked in and has some momentum going, and that might just be a foreshadow to something you and me both have coming up when we get to stock downs. But before we can get to stock downs, we have to find out who we're going to give stock ups to this week as we hit this week's edition of the Stock Watch. All right, Chris, I'm going to start things off here this week. And I'm going to start off nice and simple. Maybe this is a little bit of a divisive issue. I know not everybody's going to agree with me here. but I'm going to give a stock up to day racing at Richmond. The truck race was fine, but the cup race, so much more entertaining. The cup race was so much more entertaining than the last couple of, whether you want to call them summer or fall races at Richmond that have been night races, which historically is where this race is. I am all about day races at Richmond now, which is something I didn't necessarily think I would like heading in. It brought that upper groove alive early. I mean, it looked like Ricky Stenhouse Jr. was losing his car early and about to wreck and hit the wall. Five laps later, half the field, it seemed like, was running up against the wall at Richmond. That never happens until super late in the race when tires have fallen off. If it happens then, I loved it. Stock up. Day racing at Richmond. Let's only race at Richmond during the day from now on. So it has been said. NASCAR, let it be ridden and make it happen. Stock up. Day racing at Richmond.
All right, my first stock up is going to go to Kevin Harvick. Sir, you are pulling off a masterclass. You go 65 races and then perfectly pull off order, I mean race, 66, and then 67, and just blow the playoffs wide open and into chaos. Just stock up for getting the hang of this car at the perfect time and putting off some insane masterclasses on these last two tracks. Stock up, Kevin Harvick.
Yeah, and tough to believe, win number 37 for Harvick at Stewart Haas Racing compared to just 23 races they won at RCR, that being how it split between his 60 wins and his Cup Series career. But, man, hard to believe he's at 37 races already at Stewart Haas Racing. But congratulations to Harvick over the weekend. Since Chris took Harvick, I will go with the man who finished second, who outside of Kevin Harvick is arguably maybe the hottest driver in the Cup Series over the last couple races and potentially the last month. That would be C-Bell. So I don't have a bell to ring, but I do have an engine to rev. Stock up to Christopher Bell for both Richmond and the last month.
My second stock up is going to go to the next gen car at the second time around at Richmond. The car showed itself, like last time around, this time around showed itself equally as well in my book. Great racing, equal across the field, tight racing, and taking the occasional hard knock that Ross and others would throw at it. Stock up to the next-gen car.
You mean the next-gen car occasionally gets chastained? As Kyle Busch would say. Stock up to me, yay. Or I guess that was a drum symbol. I don't know, whatever. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'll be here for the rest of the podcast and through the playoffs. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Twice a week. Right here on 991thesportsanimal.com on the lead lap. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. My next stock up to Ryan Blaney. You went to a track where everyone thought Martin Truex Jr. had the best shot to lock into the playoffs and knock you out of the playoffs. Yet you leave with a bigger points lead over Martin Truex Jr. than you entered the race with. That's got to equal a stock up.
All right, my next stock up is going to go to Ford. You basically pulled off half of the top five, like a lot of your drivers in the very top of the standings in this race. Stock up to Ford for your performance at Richmond.
Yeah, half of the top five, including the winner in Kevin Harvick there for Ford. For my final stock up, I'm going to throw it back to Saturday night, and that is to your Truck Series winner, Chandler Smith. Congratulations again on the baby. Congratulations on the win. And stock up, Chandler Smith. All right, Chris, I hinted at this with playing that audio clip from Kyle Petty where we did. So why don't we both start off with our stock downs in this same area since we're going in different directions here. But since I started stock ups, I'll allow you to go first and stock down.
My first stock down is going to go to Martin Truex Jr. Richmond was your best shot at
getting yourself locked into the playoffs, and whether it just be by your driving performance or the setup, you just didn't get it. And now if you want to stay in, you're going to either have the mechanicals gods smite Ryan Blaney or some other circumstance, almost just luck required to get locked in, or you're just not going to make it into the playoffs. So stock down Martin Truex Jr.
Stock down. Do you get what I'm saying on the podcast? I was trying to set up something and it didn't work clearly. So stock down to that. I was trying to get you to start off with your stock down for what we both are doing. A stock down is essentially the same thing in a different way. So I'll go with my first stock down here. And hopefully you will follow me this time. Okay. Without me having to clearly say it. I was trying to leave some illusion there for the listeners, but we'll try this again. If not, I will have you stock down, both of us here for this. So stock down to the playoff field, because one of the most dangerous men in NASCAR now has back-to-back wins, now has all the confidence in the world. If you doubted him, oh, you might look like a dum-dum, and I don't mean the sucker right now, or the talking statue guy from Night at the Museum who only wanted some gum-gum from Dum Dum. That was the security guard that Adam Sandler played. Ben Stiller. Never mind. Not Adam Sandler, right? Yeah, Ben Stiller. Oh, that analogy got away from me. But anyways, stock down for that analogy. That just failed miserably. But anyways, the rest of the field was locked into the playoffs. You've allowed the closer to wake up. And I have no question he can compete for a championship. Is there enough ponies under the hood of Ford to compete for a championship? That's the only question I have, but you might have allowed a sleeping giant to awake at the right time. Happy Harvick may have figured out the next gen car. Stock down to the rest of the playoff field for allowing it to happen.
And following that up, stock down to the fans that doubted Kevin Harvick, myself included.
Thank you for getting what I was saying this time around. Even when I failed miserably at my own analogies and ramblings.
Yes, but stock down to myself and the fans for doubting Harvick. What has, like, a sleeping giant has been awakened. Be careful. Stock down.
All right, my next stock down is to Denny Hamlin. There may not have been necessarily a penalty this week on pit road, but there were, for a second week in a row, pit stop issues with slow pit stops. They just cannot get pit road figured out for this number 11 team, and it could very likely cost them a shot at a championship. We know it's cost them a couple of wins this year and several playoff points. They have got to get this figured out in the next 2 weeks. Stock down to Denny Hamlin and the 11 crew on pit road.
May I add an honorable mention to stock down before I get to my actual last stock down?
I suppose.
Stock down everybody that kept failing pre-qualifying tech inspections.
And stole my thunder. But okay.
Is that one of yours?
More specific, but yes. Yeah, continue.
Anyways. I won't go any further on that one, just to allow you to keep some of your thunder. But stock down on the tech inspections.
Go ahead, continue for your next one.
All right, my next one, soapbox warning, Dodge's chances of getting back into NASCAR anytime soon. As much as anybody around that's a muscle car enthusiast or wants to own a V8 before they all go the way of the dodo.
Buy them now.
Yes, buy them now, because in case you missed the news, yes, like I guess as we released this yesterday, today as we taped this, Dodge is killing off the V8 in the Charger and the Challenger. And I guess this is a part of their whole electric push, and they drop a weird crossover four by four car sport utility vehicle, as if there aren't enough of those out there. Just there goes the V8, there goes the Charger, there goes the Challenger, and there goes our hopes of ever getting Dodge back into the sport before the whole thing goes electric. Stock down to Dodge's chances of getting back into NASCAR.
Well, maybe they'll lead the way in that new electric series that we're hearing so many rumors about.
Maybe.
Not the way we wanted Dodge to come back into the sport. But Yeah, it's just it's a sad, sad day.
Long live the V8.
So many things. Go check out the work Richard Petty is doing in Congress to try to help save local racing, your ability to own cars that go fast and get loud. Go check out the work Richard Petty's doing on his social medias and Petty Enterprises social medias. Please, seriously, do go do that and check out the work he's doing and contact your local politicians, because especially here on this program for me and Chris, and speaking for, you know, our previous hosts, Ron and Chris Gorham, and a lot of our other previous hosts and regular guests. And I know speaking for a lot of you listeners, I don't really need to say this, but we're fast and loud enthusiasts here. If you're involved in this program as a listener or a guest or have been a host or a part of this program in some way, form, or fashion over the years, and they're trying to take away our ability to get fast and loud for vehicles, and I don't like it. And I bet you don't either. Anyways, final stock down. What little thunder I have left. Thank you, Chris. Stock down to college racing in specifics, as they're specifically for failing pre-race tech with both of your cars, not once, but twice at Richmond. And, oh, yeah, you also did it at Indianapolis. So that's twice in the last three races. Both of your cup cars have failed pre-race inspection twice. Really?
How do you still have crew people?
Of all the cheating that's been caught going on, or whatever you would like to call it, maybe we need to take the 16 and the 31 back to the R&D center. Post-race for a little teardown inspection. Just saying. Because that's a little sketchy. Much like, I don't remember if it's the 15 or the 51 off the top of my head for Rackley War Racing. Not Rackley War Racing. Rick Ware Racing. That has failed pre-race inspection twice on like four or five different occasions this year. Trying to think back to news and notes from like 3 or 4 weeks ago where they had failed it for like the third or fourth time. A couple weeks ago. I know it was one of the Rick Ware cars. I don't remember which one it was. But yeah, maybe we need to go a little further inspection just to make sure nothing funky is going on there with some of the other issues we've NASCAR has randomly found. Not trying to accuse anyone of cheating, but it shouldn't be. I mean, there's a lot that goes with these tech inspections, but come on, colleague racing, it shouldn't be that hard. All right, Chris, any final thoughts, anything we missed in today's program?
I think we've hit the highlights.
Oh, we've hit some highlights. We've also probably hit a few lowlights, which is typical. I mean, I was being serious, but okay. If you want to joke about things, Chris. All right, couple of business things here before we wrap up. On Friday's edition of the podcast, we talked about this a little bit last Friday, teased it a little bit. We should have info on this Friday's edition of the podcast for a way for you to get involved by texting us. You may, if you're a listener of the station, already heard a little bit about our new text line. We're going to have ways that you can get specifically involved with the Lead Lap podcast 24/7, texting Chris and myself through our hotline number here at the station using a keyword. Where you can text us your questions. We'll run some polls through that. You can send us your race picks. You can answer questions that we may have on the show. Send us your feedback. Respond to things we may say on the show. Text us at 24/7. We're going to start getting more involved with your interactions, things you text us through that number on the podcast. We'll have more details on what you need to do and how that will work on Friday's edition of the Lead Lap. Obviously, we will talk about this weekend's action at the Glen. Also, might have a surprise or two in store for Friday and hopefully for next week as well. But Chris, as always, thank you very much. It's been fun as always. Our apologies again for being late this week. I probably should have gone ahead and played it safe. and said, hey, it's the start of high school football. Things are going to be crazy. And we should probably just plan on a Wednesday drop for the first episode of this week, looking back at it. But, you know, can't play revisionist history. Lessons learned.
True. I just have one sentence on the matter to say. Let the madness begin.
Mass pandemonium.
Do you really have to invoke that?
Well, of course I do. But I won't tell you how you can save thousands of dollars. But mass pan, just a different kind of mass pan than what
we
have.
Are we sure he's not trademarked that phrase yet?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Won't give away free sponsorship, so we'll just keep things kind of vague. Leave people wondering. You'll have to tune into Sports Talk to figure out exactly what we're talking about. But should have some nice, fun things happening. Will be a good show on Friday. Should have a lot of action to talk about. Gonna have something we'll definitely talk about. There was some interesting comments made by Daniel Suarez in regard to Kyle Busch and Kyle Busch's contract situation and the issues going on at Joe Gibbs Racing with resolving that contract situation. So we're going to talk about what Daniel Suarez had to say on the issue. That's going to be on Friday's show. That will be interesting. Of course, we'll have track facts. We'll have your weekend race preview. Chris, you're going to have a little bit of an F1 update for us as there's some more developments going on there. And we'll have some more pandemonium in the world of racing to talk about. And a whole lot of other crazy going on in mine and Chris's life that we'll just try to cope with and survive. But that's going to do it for this edition of the Lead Lap. As always, thanks most importantly to each and every single one of you that clicked the listen button, that clicked the download button, to those of you who clicked the subscribe button, for those of you who take the time to rate and share this program each and every single time that you do. It does mean the world to me and Chris. Absolutely. Love your feedback. We'll take it anytime. You can give that to us on Twitter again. Show Twitter account is at LeadLapCast, WNML. You find me on Twitter at Sam_Foreman, WNML. Foreman is spelled F-O-R-M-A-N. Chris is on Twitter at Z_E_Bernard. You can find the show on Facebook at LeadLap Radio. You can find 99.1 The Sports Animal on all forms of social media by searching for at 991 The Sports Animal. And don't forget the show normally coming your way every Tuesday and Friday at 1 o'clock Eastern on 991thesportsanimal.com and across your favorite podcast platform. And that's basically every podcast platform as a double down. You can bet the Lead Lap is on it. If it exists, if it has any kind of real following and listener base, Chris, the Lead Lap is what?
You've got me at a loss here.
On it was what I was looking for. But
dang it.
That will work. I guess you could say I've lapped him on that one. I didn't know if he'd do it or not, so I was just pausing for dramatic effects, if nonetheless. But anyways, that's going to do it for this Wednesday edition of the Lead Lap for our 27th week, talking all things NASCAR in racing here in year number 25 of being the longest-lasting, longest-running NASCAR and racing program in the South. We've enjoyed getting fast and loud with you for another edition of the Lead Lap. Time to close up the Sports Animal Race Garage for another week. Chris, been fun. For Chris Bernard and everyone here at 991 The Sports Animal, I'm Sam Foreman saying take it easy. Hit it, Ron.
Been to the races lately?
Wow. You've been tuned into the Lead Lap with Sam Foreman and Chris Bernard exclusively on 99.1 thesportsanimal.com and your favorite podcasting format. The Lead Lap comes your way every Tuesday and Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time during race season. Tune in each week as the guys talk all things racing, the biggest headlines from around the world of NASCAR, and bring you hard-hitting and entertaining interviews. This has been WNML's The Lead Lap.
former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see, good for my career. Send me to rehab, though, so. That's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.